CheersCast is part of the Fire and Water Network.
Sam is tagging along. We need some time to ourselves.
Well, you know, darling, it is Sam.
Frasier, am I going to have to play bad cop?
Now, let me understand. Are you saying that up until this point, you've been playing good cop?
Hello and welcome back to CheersCast, the podcast where everybody knows your name. I'm your host, Ryan Daly, and joining me for the final episode of Season 9, please welcome back our friend from the SNL Nerds podcast, Mr. John Trumbull.
Oh, I was really scared you were like, welcoming back for the final time. I was like, wait, what did I do? What? Oh, did I offend Ryan? What's? No, there are two seasons of the show left. We were like just talking about next season. What the?
Eventually, it will be the final time. Not yet. Hopefully,
No, we're going to loop right someday. Back around to the beginning. We're going to go back to the Diane years, everybody. Don't listen to him. He's lying.
The rewatch.
The Cheers rewatch podcast.
And where we listen to old episodes of Cheers cast and comment. It's
like, yes.
And that wasn't very insightful.
That's an idea. We all critique each other's episodes of Cheers cast.
Yeah. I don't know. Your guest sounded kind of sleepy that time. It could have been better. But
this was not a good episode for this guy.
This episode offended a lot of people. I got a bunch of hate mail for this one.
I didn't care for this male episode at all.
That's why I stopped doing them. Actually, folks, I will do a little bit of a listener feedback section and kind of final wrap-ups at the end of this episode. But for the moment, John and I are talking about Season 9, Episode 26, or based on some streaming platforms, Episode 27, because some of them break the 200th episode into two parts. I don't.
Oh, that's why. Yeah, I just watched it on Paramount Plus, and it was listed as episode 27, yeah. And then, yeah, so right. I'm very confused.
Anywho, this episode is called Uncle Sam Wants You. It's written by Dan Staley and Rob Long, directed by James Burrows, and the original air date was Thursday, May 2nd, 1991. Sam has really bonded with Frasier and Lilith's son, Frederick, so much so that he's intruding on their time as parents. When it appears that little Freddie prefers Sam over his own father, Frasier angrily challenges Sam to get a child of his own. While it may have been meant to hurt Sam's feelings in the heat of the moment, Sam takes it to heart and starts thinking about having a child. The problem is, the only women he's really close to are Carla, who isn't having a ninth child, even if it is with Sam, and Rebecca. No other woman would have Sam's child on his terms, which is basically carrying the baby to term and then giving it away to him. Later that night, Sam dreams that the king himself, Elvis Presley, speaks to him from the television and encourages him to have a child with Rebecca. Sam makes the case to Rebecca, who, in the moment, can't think of a reason not to have a baby with Sam. In fact, she's so excited about the idea that she loses all sensory awareness and rational thought. Exactly what you want from a mother.
That was an excellent recap, I gotta say. That was well done. That was, that was better than the episode in some places.
the two thoughts I had watching this one, I'll kind of ask you your big thoughts, but the things that came to me as I was watching it were, first, I don't know about you, I think this episode flies by. Mm-hmm. It just went really fast. And I was like, oh, there's not really any subplots that kind of like distract, but it also just feels, I don't want to say thin, but it's a little bit stripped. And I'll kind of come back to that one, but my other
thought is... just because Rebecca loses her coat at the end? What's
yeah. Wordplay. My other thought was, despite the fact that this is obviously a Sam-centric episode, I think it's low-key one of Frasier's best.
I would agree.
Frasier is awesome in this one.
Yeah, it is a great, great performance from Kelsey Grammer. I was writing down many of my favorite moments as I was going, and a lot of them are Frasier lines and moments. So
what were your thoughts overall on the episode?
I think the main thing was I was kind of surprised by how much of this I didn't remember as well as I thought. I knew the basic thrust of it, that like Sam is bonding with Freddie so much. And I think we just had like the episode where Sam's babysitting for Freddie and mm-hmm. he gets locked out of the apartment overnight. So they did set that up.
Yeah.
Freddie's still like very, very young at this point. Right.
Right, right. They were talking about putting him in preschool a few episodes ago, but yeah.
Okay, okay. And like I remembered that, and I remembered the ending with Elvis talking to Sam through the TV, which is just really weird and out there for Cheers. I can get into that more a little later if you want, but I'm just
like,
this is still such a weird, random ending for this show because it's not the type of thing they usually did. And honestly, I think the ending might take the episode down a notch or two for me. Like, the ending doesn't seem to proceed come organically out of what came before. It's just kind of out of nowhere.
I agree with that. And it kind of sets up some of my less toned down enthusiasm for parts of season 10, which is the subplot that comes out of this one with the pregnancy. And because you're right, it does feel like it's very out of left field, especially like the way Sam and Rebecca are coupled at the end of this one. Forever, I thought that the pregnancy plot line that starts at the end of this one and goes into season 10 was because Kirstie Alley got pregnant in real life.
That is also what I thought.
They abandoned the plot line because she had a miscarriage. And then I found out in the preparation for this season months ago that no, that happened at the beginning of season 9, that she got pregnant.
She had the miscarriage in 1990.
At the very beginning of season 9. So they were planning to do a story where she was pregnant and it might have been Sam's baby or it might have been Robin's baby. But because she had the miscarriage before they even brought it up for the character, they never had to explore it. So I was like, okay, well then why did they do this really ill-advised pregnancy storyline with Sam and Rebecca at the end of this one in season 10?
Right.
And they're it was just an idea. They just thought they needed to move the characters somewhere where they hadn't been before. So it was just a natural story idea. And I was like, and then they realized like partway into season 10, it's like, nobody likes this idea. And we haven't come up with a good justification for it. Like we're even having the characters in the show say, this is a bad idea. So like, we gotta just nix this. So it's really, So it's an anchor around the neck of season 10, which still has some incredibly funny parts. I'm not saying I'm not going to love that season.
I know you don't like to jump ahead too much as a general rule, but it is tough to discuss this, the beginning of the storyline, without keeping in mind how it ended and also the backstory. There is like sort of, and actually I was doing the same thing as you. I was double checking. I was like, okay, so I know she had a miscarriage at some point. When did that happen? And did they change the storyline because of the miscarriage? And then I, like you, I found out that she had the miscarriage in 1990. She adopted a couple kids after that.
Right.
I mean, I would like to think that they wouldn't have proceeded with the storyline if Kirstie Alley wasn't okay with it. So maybe she didn't have a problem at this point. Who knows? It's just still just such a strange choice. And I wonder if that's just maybe because by this point in Cheers, they expected to have a cliffhanger to end the season with. So maybe they just thought, oh, well, you know, we're winding up the 9th season. The show's getting a little long in the tooth. Maybe we got to goose up the interest. So let's have a baby. But it's tough to imagine how it would work with these two characters, you know? Because we've already done baby storylines with Carla and with Frasier and Lilith very recently. So I don't see what like a Sam and Rebecca baby would give them that they didn't already have from other quarters. So
and again, it my gut feeling is something that sort of confirms the other theory that I had, was that they didn't know what else to do with Rebecca after Sam got together with her at the end of the last season. I think they've really been struggling for what is her purpose in the show, what is her place in the ensemble. And this was something, but they really
kind of rebranded the character as like neurotic train wreck lady. And
but they also kind of eliminated her as a real love interest for Sam. Like they kind of said it as like they're good friends. They're not going to be, she's going to be Diane 2.0 at this point. She'll never be that. But it's like, well, if they can be parents together, well then that gives us the connection between the two of them. It's like, well,
honestly, that potential storyline you mentioned where she's pregnant and we don't know if the father is Sam or Robin, I think that makes a lot more sense for the show. Because that gets into the romantic subplots, which were much more of a story engine for the show. This episode, it's very clear, like, no, we're not getting together as a couple. We're not going to get married or anything like that. We are just going to have a baby together because we both think it would be neat to have a baby together, which it just seems very doomed from the start.
Yeah. Even before I had a baby of my own, I was like, this is terrible thinking. But
yeah, I mean, I would have been like 18 when this episode aired, and I was, or excuse me, 19. And even then, I think I pretty much clocked this as a bad idea. So,
yeah. Listeners, with all of that preamble, I don't want you to think I didn't like the episode. There's fallout and aspects of it that aren't my favorite, but I also think there's a whole lot of really fun stuff in this one.
I say the first three quarters of this episode, it's like Cheers firing on all cylinders. And then it's just this kind of random ending, which takes it down a notch for me.
Well, then we can get into it. In the teaser, the mail is delivered to Cheers. Obviously not by Cliff, although he is there. Woody goes through the envelopes and the letters. It's like, oh, one from Mr. Peterson, another one from Mr. Peterson, because, of course, Norm gets all his mail here. And he gets, like, four letters from Mr. Peterson and one that's just addressed to Occupant, which Woody passes over to Norm, too. I thought that was a good gag. That's and then Woody's like, oh, and one from Mr. Boyd. And he, like, almost sort of, he's like, oh, wait, that's me. That's me. Sort of like a fun little revision of the first line. Is there an Ernie Pantuso here? That's you, Coach.
Yeah, so. That's true. You know, and it's kind of funny is a page that I follow on Instagram is, I think it's called Cheers Reels, and it's just clips of Cheers.
Mm-hmm.
And oddly enough, this week that we are recording this, they've gotten up to this episode. And I kind of recognized when I was watching the clips, I was like, oh, this is the episode I'm about to do on Cheers. I probably shouldn't watch too many clips of this so I don't spoil it for myself because I haven't seen it in full in a long time. But I just thought that was a funny coincidence. And the mail scene was one of those.
That's cool. The whole thing comes to Woody got this package. He ordered a big book of crossword puzzles. And he says the exciting thing about this one is it's got all of the answers in the back. So you can fill out the puzzles without those confusing clues. And so he just kind of goes through it, flips to the back. He's like, 19 across. It's like penguin. And he hands it to Norm, like looking pretty smug, like he got the answer. And Norm kind of just pencils it in. He's like, hey, it fits. And that's it. That's our teaser. We jump right into the episode, which comes probably right after or sometime fairly quickly right after, because there's a little bit of a joke that Norm is still looking at the book with the crossword puzzles, kind of filling that out. But Rebecca comes out. She is going on a job interview. And Woody's, you know, wishes her luck. And she's like, I don't need luck because she, you know, she doesn't need luck. She's wearing her lucky dress. And she thinks she's a sure thing and everything. And she's brimming with confidence. And Sam, you know, sees her and he's like, is that what you're going to wear? And the confidence just crumbles immediately. And she's just like, they're not going to hire a loser like me. But
yeah. By this point in the series, Rebecca had maybe become a little too cartoony for my taste. And I think I've talked about this before on the podcast where, like, for me, the switch was when Robin offered her that ultimatum of like, oh, you know, I'm going to offer you this expensive diamond bracelet, and Rebecca rejects it. And then she later goes back on it and she's like, I will take that bracelet. And she's like all thrilled. And it's a very funny ending, but the character was so shallow.
I think it's my favorite Rebecca scene.
Yeah.
I think it's my favorite Rebecca scene, but
it sold her out a little bit, maybe.
I think that's probably true.
Yeah.
I definitely think it was her peak. So everything after that is. Anyway, Sam comes in, you know, he got a little baby shirt for little Freddie, and he says Babe Hound in training. And he's really excited. And then Frasier and Lilith come in with Freddie in his stroller. And Sam kind of walks up and he's like, hey, it's my best pal. And, you know, Frasier's like, oh, thank you. And he's like, oh, hey, you too, Frasier. Yeah. So, and yeah, clearly Sam is, you know, gaga for Freddie. Like that, again, continuing with what we saw in the previous episode where he was kind of frantically babysitting him. But now it's really kind of changed almost everything we think about Sam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she's like, well, they were going to the park or something, but somebody got a little thirsty. And Sam was like, oh, you need some juice? Frasier's like, you said it. Scotch on the rocks.
Yeah. And then when Frasier quickly amends that, he's like, oh, let's have some ginger ales and an apple juice for Freddie. And then he kind of taps Sam on the chest to indicate, yeah, I still want the scotch. Just put it in the ginger ale or pretend it's ginger ale.
It might be my home run. It is such a great mm-hmm. moment. And for some reason, I remember my dad loving that little part, that little thing, because nice. It's right. He asked for a scotch on the rocks and Lilith gives him a death glare. And he's like, yeah, I was just kidding. Yeah, just some apple juice for Freddie and we'll have a couple of ginger ales. And then as his back is to Lilith, so she can't see, he just taps mm-hmm. Sam and just does this kind of almost little sippy pouring gesture. And he's like, dude, top my ginger ale off with something.
And it's great because he's getting a laugh with just a gesture. There's no dialogue. It's just a look and a gesture.
But it's also not really obviously Lilith can't see it, but the gesture isn't subtle and it's not mm-hmm. classy. It's almost impatient the way he kind of plays.
He's Sam, I really need that drink. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, Sam, don't give me ginger ale for the love of God. I just remember my dad flipping over that little gesture, that line. He'd love that part. The Cranes are having this family day together. Frasier canceled all his appointments. Lilith called in sick to the lab, and she says, "Well, she put gauze over the phone and altered her voice to sound like a robot or something to sound ill." Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. Carla pipes in. She's like, "And the Oscar goes to," joking that Lilith wouldn't have to try very hard to sound ill over the phone. Right. However, I do think that little gag was funny because for this season, it would come later, B.B. Newworth beat Rhea Perlman for the Emmy Award for Best Supporting Actress in a Comedy.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, this was the first time that B.B. Newworth won for this season.
Really interesting because I was reading when I looked up trivia on this episode, this is the last episode where B.B. Newworth was still just a guest star on Cheers. And she mm-hmm. was a regular starting with the next season for season 10. So that's interesting that she was competing against Rhea Perlman in the supporting actress category.
I mean, she was in almost every episode.
Right.
By the time, definitely season 9, but most of season 8, she's in a big chunk of them. So yeah,
I wonder if she was contracted for a certain number, 13 out of the 26 or something like that. And they just used her more often than that. And maybe they finally were like, okay, we better just make her a regular.
Probably, but I think that was also something that we talked about last year when they killed off Eddie LeBeck, Thomas's character. And they're part of it was certainly the thing that he did about Rhea Perlman during an interview that mm-hmm. offended her and everybody else. But there was also this thing, a kind of story kind of going around the background was they wanted to make promote one of the characters to a regular guest star. And it was either Lilith or Eddie. And everybody was like, duh, it's Lilith has so much more potential. She's such a better character. She opens so many more avenues for comedy than Eddie does. As fun as Eddie was, he didn't.
I mean, Eddie would have just ultimately been yet another blue collar guy in Cheers.
Absolutely.
They already had that color in the palette. So
yes, exactly. The Cranes, they're going to fly a kite, and Sam's like, oh, yeah, he got one for Freddie, and his is, so much bigger, so much more colorful, so much more lavish. Mm-hmm. The one that Frasier had for Freddie is, it's plain white. It looks handmade or homemade or something like that.
Yeah.
It's cheap, and Sam is like, hey, we can tie yours to the end of this one like a tail.
So I like that Sam is sort of, without meaning to, he's upstaging Frasier and Lilith because he's just so darn enthused about spending time with Freddie. Because this is a new experience for Sam. He's never really spent a lot of time around kids on a regular basis. I think we've had one or two episodes of Sam dated a woman with a young daughter or something. And then the daughter's like a ravishing 20-year-old and Sam wants to date her now too. Right. Yeah. Right, I don't know if that episode has happened yet, but.
Yeah. It happened a while ago. Anyway, so Lilith does not like the idea of Sam tagging along on their play day. And Frasier's trying to be sympathetic. It's his friend. He doesn't have a whole lot else going on. And Lilith kind of puts it down. She's like, Frasier, am I going to have to be the bad cop here? And he's like,
yeah.
Am I to understand that up until this point, you've been playing good cop? And then cuts to a new scene now. We get our little transition. We are at Fraser and Lilith's home. It is very early in the morning, not even 6 o'clock in the morning. And Sam is at the door ringing the doorbell, and Lilith comes in wearing a navy blue, maybe silk nightgown and kimono, like a short kimono over. Very nice looking. And obviously Bibi North, even when they try to dress her down and make it look like she's just woken up, beautiful woman.
But I love Sam's reaction when she answers the door and she's like hurriedly putting her robe on over her nightgown, and he just goes, "Wow, you got hair like a woman."
It's such a
such a good sport to have so many jokes about her appearance on the show. I mean, that's something else.
Yeah, and she like that one lands because she almost looks like she doesn't know how to take that line. Yeah. But and then Sam's like, she's like, "Why are you here? It's 5:53 or something." And he's like, "Well, I came over to watch Huckleberry Hound. Freddie and I have a date to watch cartoons." She's like, "When did you make this date? He's 3 years old." He's like, "Well, he didn't say it, but he could nod." And Sam is like rushing up the stairs to get her, and Fraser just kind of walks by him. Fraser looking like a walking zombie as he's just like in his own bathrobe. And he's like, "That wasn't Sam Malone, was it? Please tell me that was an armed intruder." And Lilith is saying that every day Sam gets there earlier and earlier and leaves later and later. And this made me think of season 2, I think the episode was, and Coachy Makes 3, when Sam Diane are dating. And Coach kind of just keeps tagging along because he's lonely and basically makes it. He like even calls them a trio or something like that. Like
he's cramping their style. Yeah.
Yeah. Even when they try to set him up on a date, he can't wait to get the date out of there so that he can watch, movies with Sam and Diane. This part reminded me of that one.
I like that. I hadn't made that connection, but you're absolutely right.
And Lilith is like, he's here all the time. It's getting so that we can't make love in the morning. And Fraser just looked at her like, "I didn't know we could make love in the morning."
and she's like, "Hypothetically."
Yeah, we can't. It was just a for instance.
yeah. And then later, Fraser calls back to that when he's talking to Sam. Yes. He says, like, "What? We can't even make love in the morning." And then he goes like, "God forbid while the sun's up."
Right, exactly. Fraser, again, he's trying to be sympathetic. He describes Sam as an aging playboy, only now realizing he has nothing in his life, no family, no kids, no legacy, nothing to carry on his name. And Lilith is just like, "It's 5:58 in the morning." And he's like, "All right, time to..." He's getting the heave-ho. And Sam comes down pretending to be Freddie, asking, "Well, what's for breakfast?" Which she's angry, kind of storms off a little bit. And that's when Fraser... tell Sam as much as he appreciates the bond with Freddie, they're not getting enough private time together. And Sam is like, "Hey, I get it. Say no more. I'll take Freddie and you guys can be alone." And Lilith can cut some other shit. "No, you misunderstand. We're not saying we want to be intimate with each other right now." And that's when Fraser's like, "Yeah, God forbid while the sun is up."
Yes. Yeah. And then we have a fun scene where they're saying to Freddie, "Go to daddy." And of course, Freddie goes towards Sam because he's been spending so much more time with Sam. And that's the last straw for Fraser. He's like, "Oh, great. Now my own son doesn't recognize me as his daddy."
So. Right. And when Sam is just so desperate to please him, he's like, Freddie, "Go to your other daddy. Go to Uncle Fraser." And like losing it. And Lilith whisks Freddie into the kitchen to get breakfast. And another one of my favorite parts, and again, I remember my dad loving this line. Maybe I associate this episode with my own dad for some reason, but I remember my dad absolutely loving Fraser's line where he goes, "Sam, he's my son. I made him. I get to keep him."
Yes. That's a great line. That's a great line.
"It's my house. It's my child. It's my wife who, thanks to you, I can't even make love to in the morning." And Sam's like, "I thought you said you..." He's like, "All right, I'm raving."
Yes.
This where Sam is like, "I'm sorry. I like your kid. And I didn't realize what I was doing because I didn't know that I actually like kids before." And Fraser, "If you like kids so much, why don't you have one of your own?" Part of me wanted them to hold on that line a little bit more. Because I think I think Frasier recognizes how hard that was, how harsh that was, and immediately like tries to apologetic. He's like, Sam, I love you. You know, I love you. But it's almost like I wanted there to be another beat where we kind of see that deflate Sam and take something.
And that's
out
also
of him.
The big turn for Sam in the episode is because after that, he wasn't really thinking about, oh, gee, I want a kid of my own. But that comment, even though it was a harsh comment and then Frasier apologizes for it, that is what gets Sam thinking, maybe I should have a kid on my own. And so that is really the line that the episode turns on, because that's where Sam changes and makes a decision. Hey, I do want a kid. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like the one thing where I thought they kind of bulldozed over that with Frasier trying to like almost getting to the end of the scene or something like that.
Yeah, but I can see that. I can see that. Maybe they had to edit it a little tight because of the time limit or something. Who knows?
Maybe. Yeah. We jump back to the bar. Rebecca has come back from her job interview. She's wearing an overcoat over her nice like business suit, and she got so tired of waiting during the job interview that she stepped out to get a cigarette. And as she moves her hand, we see that there's a hole burned into like through her jacket. Like you just see the charred edges of it. Yeah.
And I was momentarily confused when she walked back into the bar because she's wearing the same dress that she was going on the interview on earlier. And I'm like, wait a minute, but that last scene was at like 5:50 on a Saturday morning. So is Rebecca? And at first I was like, are they going to say Rebecca spent the night with somebody? And this is like a walk of shame thing. But I guess it's just supposed to be that's her interview outfit, is that pink dress, because she's wearing it again at the end of the episode. So
right,
I guess she just wears that. Yeah. So.
Yeah. We cut to a scene. And again, like that scene is just really fast and it helps kind of propel this episode kind of really quick. Cause now we get a scene in the office and Sam is sitting at his desk and he's just kind of bouncing a ball off the door into his hand, kind of doing a whole bounce thing. Definitely in thought, like kind of mulling over something. And Carla comes out of the stock room. She was putting something away and she's watching him throw the ball and she opens the door and the ball just kind of like is same as throwing it and just kind of bounces out of there. And she closes the door again. And she's like, obviously you have to talk about something. What's going on? And Sam starts to kind of go through like what the crisis that he's in, but we get a knock at the door. Carla opens it and Norm walks in holding his beer mug.
Yeah.
With the blue bouncy ball floating in it. And he's like, Sam, you don't expect me to pay for this beer, do you? And Sam is like, no, I don't. He's like, good. And he starts drinking from it.
good gag. I mean, Norm doesn't have a huge part in this episode by any means, but that's a solid Norm gag. So,
we'll come to it. I think Cliff only has one line in the whole episode. So,
yeah, there's not a lot of Cliff. Like, we have a little of Paul at the bar, which was kind of a pleasant surprise at this point in the series. But like one of the bits I'd totally forgotten in this episode was this really nice Sam and Carla scene where Sam is...
It's fun, yeah.
Yeah, it's a fun, funny scene, but it also is serious enough that we get where Sam is coming from, where he just kind of confesses to Carla that he wants to have a kid.
Yeah, he starts at asking her if she thinks men have a biological clock too, because it's obviously the phenomena associated with women. Talk about like how long they can bear children. He's like, do you think men have a biological clock too? And she's like, oh yeah, it usually kicks in right around the time they say, hey Carla, you want to go out tonight?
right.
Sam is thinking that he wants to have a kid. He's all alone. He wants someone to take care of. And she's like, have you thought about getting a dog? And he's like, no, I don't want a dog. He's like, I want somebody to be with and that I can watch grow. She's like, have you thought about getting a plant? And she's like, throwing these back at him.
Yeah.
She's like, have you picked out a mother yet at least? And he's like, no, I really haven't. And she's like, so you're not even going to ask me? And he's like, oh, God, I didn't even think about that. I didn't even think about you, Carla. Would you do that? And she's like, are you nuts? And she kind of just totally flips it on. She's like, you think I'm going to go through labor an eighth time because you're a little lonely? And when she said that, I was like, wait a minute. It would be her ninth labor. But then I was like, nope, two of her kids are twins.
Twins.
She had two of the kids together. So even though she has eight kids, she went through the birth of labor seven times. So this would be. But I like that. Just because you're a little lonely?
And she, like Rhea Perlman, just says that line so brilliantly, just, you know, because you're a little lonely. Just like taking Sam apart in a line and I'm watching this, and at this point in the episode, I was like, oh God, like Ted Danson's really good as Sam in this episode. Kelsey Grammer's really good as Frasier. And now Rhea Perlman's as Carla's having a great episode. I was like, I don't know how I'm going to pick my employee of the week here. They're all having a great episode. Everyone's really good.
Despite how much she, maybe as much as the other guys, if not a little more so, how much she idolizes Sam and has her part of her that's her fangirl crush and kind of worships him as a celebrity and as a sports hero, there's also the part of her that is the traditional court jester where she's the only one who can mock the king and get away with it.
Yeah.
Because she can cut his feet out from under him better than anybody.
She's the best equipped to call Sam on his BS. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's the way. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. But anyway, she starts kind of going through, but before we get out of this one, she's like, do you know what being a parent means? And she kind of talks about all the things going through, like the ways that, essentially, of the list of like the ways that you have to sacrifice, not just your time, but your interests, your love, your clothing, even leather clothing. Mm-hmm. They spit up on.
They throw up on everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it has this nice sort of touching ending. I mean, it's kind of tough to take these sort of generally broad sitcom characters and play real emotions with them. But Ted Danson and Rhea Perlman are both such great actors. They can make that transition. You know, having a scene where Carla confesses that, yeah, she does love being a mom and she actually loves her kids. Like those moments where Norm admits he really does love his wife, Vera. You can probably count the total number of occurrences on one hand throughout the entire series, but it has a lot of impact because those are so rare. And I really like that. I was like, wow, this is a really good Sam Carla scene.
Totally agree. Yeah. A little bit later, Sam's at the bar trying to find a mother by looking through his many little black books. and Woody's suggesting Rebecca, just as she is kind of coming back from another interview. She's not even breaking her stride. She just keeps walking past them, describing. She's like, yeah, the interview went great until I bumped into the CEO into a fax machine and sent a copy of his butt to Wichita. Out of there. And Sam is going to call one of the girls.
Here's the LA from Wichita. Wasn't she from somewhere in that area, I think?
Oh, gosh. I would have to.
I think I did read that. But Wichita is just a funny comedy word. Yeah, so I'm sure that's why they picked Wichita. Yeah. But I just thought of that. Yeah, I think she was from Wichita.
Sam has to, you know, he's going to call one of the girls to ask her. But he's like, hey, Anna, like, what am I going to say? Like, how do I actually ask a woman this? And he approaches a woman who was sitting at the bar. And the woman, who's credited as, what is her name? Daria. We don't actually hear that. But she is played by Tress McNeil, mostly known as a voice actress in everything, really. Like any kind of animated series. Like, she's
been on The Simpsons for ages, right?
Simpsons, Futurama, but also, like, tons of, like, kids animation stuff, DC, like, superhero shows and things like that. Like, yeah, she's one of the like premier voice actresses out there.
Yeah. Nice.
So yeah,
nice.
I when I saw that name, I was like, oh, that's really cool.
That's cool. I missed that in the credits. That's cool.
Yeah. And he approaches her and he's like, how would you feel if, you know, basically essentially asks her, how would she feel if a casual acquaintance, maybe somebody she dated a couple of years ago, asked her to have a baby? And Sam was like, now I'm not talking about commitment here. Understand that. He's like, the picture is get pregnant, have the baby, give it to me, go away.
And then he's amazed that she's offended by this.
Yeah. She's like, you're asking how I would feel if you wanted me to be a breeder or an incubator for your seed. And he's like, those are good words. And he kind of gets a notebook. He's going to start writing these down. And he's like, okay, he wants to take notes on her answer. And she throws her drink in his face.
Yeah.
And she storms off and he kind of takes a moment, writes down in the notebook, breeder, incubator, red flag words.
Yeah.
This is another one where I kind of like spun off because like if this episode had been done today or like within a more modern time, and maybe, I mean, this could have been saved for the other season too, but they definitely could have talked about like surrogacy or something like that. I mean, there would be complications about him being a single bachelor, but certainly if he could afford to like pay someone to bear the child for, which is a kind of booming and thriving business today. Actually, I know a woman friend of mine has had 4 children. Only 2 of them are hers. She had the other 2 as a surrogate mother because, for whatever reason, she's the luckiest woman on the earth. Childbirth was really easy for her. Like, the weight gain, the labor pains, it just, like, the babies just dropped out of her, like, nothing. So she was like, hey, if it's that easy, I can make some money doing this. And that's, I'm putting that much more crudely.
Wow.
But it was, that essentially what it was. She had a surrogate, she was a surrogate twice because the pregnancy went easy on her. So,
That's amazing. That's amazing. Yeah. And honestly, hearing you talk about it now, they could have gotten an episode or 2 out of that, of like maybe Sam going to an old girlfriend and saying like, hey, how about we try having a kid together, or Sam looking into adoption, or there are other avenues they could have gone. But I guess it doesn't really make a great cliffhanger unless Rebecca has agreed to be the mother. I don't think you can really turn the end of the season on Sam just decides he wants to be a father, because that's so easy to walk back. Right. But if it's 2 of our regulars, that's a little more major. That feels like more of a big thing.
Yeah.
But that could be a funny episode, like Sam going to an old girlfriend who he thinks might be a good mother, and maybe there's something hideously wrong with her, or he looks into at an adoption agency or something like that, or a surrogate. Yeah. They could have gotten a little more out of that idea, but I guess because of the way they went, not too practical.
And here, Cliff's only line is he says he hopes, you know, if it's a boy or girl, he hopes Sam names the child Clifford Clavin Malone. And Paul, this is where Paul kind of says, you know, he hopes Sam doesn't bring the baby to Cheers because he doesn't like babies. And Woody's like, you know, wouldn't you like a helpless little guy around here? Somebody all soft and cuddly that you can burp every once in a while. And Paul just kind of looks between Norm and Cliff. He's like, yeah, we need another one of those.
Yeah. that's great. And, you know, it's fun to see one of the semi-regular barflies getting more to do. And Paul was almost a regular himself in the last couple seasons of the show. They developed his character. Yeah. And he had a sense of his personality. And, like, they must have really liked having Paul Wilson around, because I remember, I think it was maybe in the Life magazine where Cheers was coming to an end, and George Wendt was saying, people ask me who else could play my character, and lots of people say like John Goodman, but I think Paul Wilson would be a great Norm. And I mean, that's a testament to how well he was loved by the cast.
Right. Yeah, it was really in the middle of this season was when they kind of bumped him up and made a conscious decision to make him more of a character, almost like the third man of the trio of the barflies.
Yeah.
And yeah, it becomes much more prevalent in the next season or 2.
Yeah.
And then Frasier comes in with Freddie in the stroller and talks to Sam again. Like these scenes are like shooting by. But Frasier comes in for another quick one, and he's just like, "I want to apologize, Sam. I forgot how much you mean to Freddie and how much he means to you. And I also forgot that Lilith and I have opera tickets tonight, and I'm not going to pass those up."
No, he said Jerome Robbins Broadway. At $100 a ticket. And and that kind of struck me, because that's obviously supposed to be a laugh line, but it got next to no reaction. And I think maybe because it wasn't a funny sounding show. They should have picked something with a more humorous title or something, and then that line could have gotten more of a laugh. But
The better gag, I think, is when Frasier just kind of like, after he says that, he kind of like taps the stroller by Freddie, and he's like, have fun, Freddie. Daddy loves you. And he turns and walks out there. And
exactly. And yeah, if we'd had like a funny sounding opera name or something like that. And then also we could have had Kelsey Grammer show up in a tuxedo at the end of the episode. Yeah. Missed opportunity there.
And then we cut to it after closing time. Woody is saying, you know, he wants to lock up. And Sam's like, no, I'll do it. I got to stick around, wait for Frasier and Lilith to come back, because Freddie's still in there in the stroller. And Woody leaves, and Sam stays around, and he turns on the television to just kind of kill time. He's watching, and there's an Elvis movie, I think Blue Hawaii. But my confession, I have never seen a full Elvis Presley movie.
I'm not sure if I have either. I know I have Viva Las Vegas on one of my watch lists on some streaming service, but I don't think I've still watched Viva Las Vegas. I've seen bits and pieces of it, but no, I don't know if I've ever watched a full-length Elvis Presley movie.
Yeah.
So
same.
Do we know who plays Elvis in this scene?
We do, actually, because the Elvis is played by Pete Wilcox. And if you look on his IMDb credits, he appeared in 25 shows.
Okay.
Most of them as Elvis. So he was
an
Elvis impersonator. Like, that was his gig.
Right.
He was an Elvis impersonator. I should have cross-checked this because I'm almost positive. Right around the same time that this episode came out, I think there was an episode of Married with Children where Peggy Bundy bumps into Elvis at Al's shoe store. And he's like, no, it wasn't Elvis. How are you just seeing things? And then she becomes kind of fixated with Elvis impersonators or something. And this like group of women who love Elvis. And then Al is going to try and sell blue suede shoes to corner this market or something like that. And there was like a resurgence of Elvis popularity at this time.
Right. I wonder if he could have been in that Golden Girls episode with the young Quentin Tarantino, where they had, for some reason, a bunch of Elvis impersonators, and Quentin Tarantino would always talk about that in interviews. He was like, look, I was the young Sun Records Elvis, okay? And, you know, everybody else was like old, fat Vegas Elvis. I was the young Elvis. And I was like, okay, Quentin, no one really cares, but okay.
But anyway,
I don't know what year that would have been, but that would have been amusing. Another thing that struck me as kind of weird about this scene or this ending in general is, outside of Cheers having a dream sequence, which they didn't do a lot, we had like a dream sequence in the episode where Sam and Diane almost get married, and they're like maybe quick nightmare flashes, but this is like a sustained dream sequence. The other thing that struck me when I was looking at the scene the second time was, this honestly would make a lot more sense for Carla. Carla, I could see falling asleep and listening to what Elvis tells her. I'm like, do we know that Sam is, you know, why is Sam listening to Elvis other than it's telling him what he wants to hear?
Yeah, I mean, it would have made more sense if it was the Three Stooges, based on what you know about Sam. A couple, maybe John Wayne.
Or some, you know, some ladies' man type or something like that.
Yeah,
but maybe they just thought Elvis was the funniest for a comedy purpose. But I was like, Carla's the one who has the big Elvis fandom. It would make so much more sense for Carla. I don't know. It just seems like sort of out of nowhere to me.
It does a little bit. So Sam falls asleep in his chair, and then the following scene is a dream. We probably suss that out, but they don't kind of advertise it really. Mm-hmm. But Elvis starts.
Well, no, Sam does say like, "Oh, I'm having a dream with Elvis."
You're right. He does. Because Elvis is like, Sam. And Sam kind of wakes up. He's like, who's talking? He's like, it's me, Elvis. And he kind of looks at the TV and does his little jump. And Elvis is like, come up close to the TV. I don't want to shout at you. And Sam is like, okay. So he's like, he's like, I'm having a dream about Elvis. And then he stands on a chair right in front of the TV and just says, what do you want with me, Elvis?
He's saying like, well, honestly, I think you're overlooking a possible mother for your child is overlooking Rebecca, because she's been a true friend. She has a lot of love to give, and she's a handsome woman.
And she's a handsome woman, which Sam will be repeat. Yeah. There's a little brief moment where, because he's saying, he's like, having a child is a great, like, the best thing I ever did was have little Lisa Marie. And shows a picture, her baby picture, and Sam is like, you know, you'll be happy to know she turns out to be a real babe, Elvis. And he's like, don't make me come through the TV, Sam.
Now, I know Lisa Marie Presley was kind of notable at this point. Had she, like, she married Michael Jackson at one point, I know, and she married
that
Nicolas
was later
Cage way
in
down
the 90s,
line.
But
okay.
I first saw her, or kind of like knew her, in the movie The Naked Gun, the police squad movie.
Well, that was Priscilla Presley. That was Priscilla Presley, not Lisa Marie, right? Yeah.
You're right. That was Priscilla. Oh, yeah. Okay. All right.
So was Lisa Marie just like tabloid fodder at that point? I'm just like, I mean, obviously she's notable because she's Elvis's daughter.
Right. But she and Michael Jackson didn't get, I don't know the timer.
I'm looking it up now. I'm going to the Wikipedia. Marriages and divorces. Okay. She married a musician and actor named Danny Kehoe in 1988 at the Scientology Celebrity Center in Los Angeles. I mean, that shocker, that didn't work out. Okay, she married Michael Jackson 20 days after her divorce from the first guy, Keo. So that was still a few years in the future. She married another guy after that, and then she got engaged to another guy and then ended the engagement after she met Nicolas Cage. Nicolas Cage was her third husband. She married a fourth time. Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, yeah, this was a saga here. So, okay. Well, yeah. Well, she was a handsome woman, so.
All this time I was thinking about Priscilla Presley. But anyway, it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
So Sam is kind of thinking about Rebecca and everything, and then we kind of go back. He's still asleep, and Frasier kind of comes in, and he sees Sam asleep, and my son and his babysitter passed out in a bar.
And then
he kind of mimics this little fussy noise, like almost like a start of a cry, and Sam kind of wakes up really quick and kind of like checks on him, and it's really good parental instincts on Sam. Like he just starts to hear it, and he's instantly like trying to calm him, and Frasier's just like, same thing. And he jumps because he didn't realize Frasier was there, and he's like, no, it's fine. And he's like, thank you for watching. And Frasier starts to take Freddie out of there. They're walking to the door, and Sam is like, I just had the crazy thing. I swear I just had a conversation with Elvis Presley. And Frasier's like, Sam, I've had 4 or 5 patients who had similar experiences, and I'll simply tell you the same thing I told them. The man is dead. He says it with so much finality, but also like irritation. Like, why do we have to keep having this conversation?
I mean, because at this point in time, I think you still saw tabloid stories about Elvis Presley is alive and living a secret life somewhere as a gas station attendant or whatever. I mean, it was always some outrageous thing. And it was always Elvis looks exactly like he did in the 70s. He still has like the big sideburns and he's still wearing jumpsuits. And it's like, well, yeah, I kind of feel like if Elvis was actually living a secret life by that point and didn't die in the late 70s, he might have changed up his look a little bit, at least. That seems unlikely that he's still doing the jumpsuits.
I hope it turned out. Did you ever see the movie Bubba Ho-Tep?
Yes, I did.
Yeah,
where Bruce Campbell.
Bruce Campbell.
Elvis.
Plays Elvis. And switched his life with one of his body doubles, and the body double is the one who overdosed and died. And Bruce Campbell kind of lived in anonymity, and he's in this old folks' home, this like kind of retirement home, just like a shell of himself. And he ends up fighting a mummy because whatever.
Right.
It's kind of like
Joe Lansdale.
Joe R. Lansdale. And,
Joe
R. Lansdale. Yep.
And who's the other person in the movie? Was it Ossie Davis?
Ozzie Davis plays John F. Kennedy.
Right.
Allegedly. He's like, claims that his Kennedy's brain was put in his body.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, that old story again. Yeah. I mean, if we've seen it once, we've seen it a million times.
Anyway, here Rebecca comes back, hangs her jacket up on the coat rack, and Sam's like, what are you doing here? She's like, I came to, it's my turn to lock up and everything. And she's he's like, how the interviews go? She's like, it doesn't matter. I'm not getting a job. I'm going to be stuck here. She's basically saying her corporate dream is dead. Maybe she should have just settled for some dumb jerk and had a family. And Sam kind of looks at the TV and he's like, wow.
Ted Danson, he's so great in the part at this point, and he's so comfortable in the part. He gets a laugh just with how he turns and says, wow. I mean,
right.
Yeah. It's just, he's firing on all cylinders.
And he kind of tells her, he's like, I think that's a good idea. I think you should have a child, but you should have it with a good looking guy who's really cool. And she's like, who are you talking about? He suggests himself, and she laughs at the suggestion that they would have a baby. And he's like, come on. And he's kind of pitching it. And you see instantly, he just starts feeding the same lines that Elvis said. He's like, we're good friends. And he goes, hell, you're my best friend. And then he says, we've been through a lot together. You got a lot of love to give, and you're a handsome woman. Says the
line. And I like how Rebecca, she gives several reasons why this shouldn't happen or why this is not the best idea. And Sam just keeps asking, well, why not? Why not?
Right.
Why not? And that actually persuades her.
Right. Her first answer is, I always dreamed of growing old and dying alone. But she's like, we can't have a baby. He's like, why not? She's like, and with you, why would we have a baby together? He's like, why not? And she's just eventually it clicks. She's like, yeah, I don't know why not. She doesn't have an answer for it. And then she has this joke. She's like, everybody does it. Everybody has kids. My mom did it. Your mom did it. Carla does it all the time.
That's a great line. Yeah.
And then
she says, maybe this would be something I'm actually good at, which what a terrific reason to have a child.
Right. Exactly. They do share a kiss which feels like there's like some almost some nervous apprehension about it. Like that's the kind of beginning of this. They're sealing this deal with a kiss, this sort of contract. But it's also kind of like, all right, how's this going? And then she goes into her manic Rebecca phase, where now she's just like super excited and depressed. And she's like, this is going to change her whole life. No more Rebecca the jerk or Rebecca the loser, Rebecca the mother. And she's like walks out the door, and she, but the lights are off, and we only hear the sound of something ripping. Mm-hmm. And Sam opens the door, and her whole business kind of pink suit is just hanging from the door. It got stuck in the door.
Yeah.
And she comes back still manic, and she's just wearing her slip. And she's like, I forgot my coat. And she grabs her coat from the coat rack, but the coat is tied to the coat rack just for the sake of the joke. And she puts the coat on, and she's like, she's going up the stairs, dragging the coat rack behind her and completely oblivious to this. And it ends with the line, Sam is kind of realizing, he's like, you better be right, Elvis. And that's kind of like a good joke. But I think like the whole blocking of that last part, I think like the audience didn't really react to the suit getting ripped off because we didn't understand it. Cause it's like, it's too dark and it's too fast where she goes out the door and we just hear our rip.
Yeah.
And then he pulls it open, and then she's like, she's back in, and then she grabs her jacket.
Yeah. I mean, we don't see it
double knotted to the,
I mean, like it might have been funnier
to the coat rack
if somehow she closed the bar door behind her and it ripped the dress off the back of her. I don't know. Yeah. That could have been a little funnier than it was. Cause I think it's funnier to see the physical comedy of that than to just hear it and do it through implication. But yeah, whatever. I'm still reeling from the Elvis of it all. I still think that's just such a weird, random way to end a Cheers episode. So
it was an interesting idea to have Sam kind of pursue this as a character idea to see what he would be like as a father. And I think they set that up well, but then they were like, well, who is going to be the mother? It's got to be Rebecca because she's the female lead and we need her to do something. Yeah. And maybe this will kind of extend their viability as a couple. Yeah. But just right from the beginning, it's like, okay, this is a dream. This is irrational. This is a fever dream. Like nothing about this makes sense.
The other thing that this episode made me wonder about was because, you know, you see Sam and he's bonding with baby Freddy so much. It got me thinking because, like, we've seen Freddie as an adult now on the revived Frasier show, where he's now a young man in his 30s and he's still living in Boston. I'm watching this and I'm like, I wonder if Freddie is still friends with Sam. Does he ever like go to Cheers? Does he ever hang out there? Is Sam like a nice uncle to him, or is he just not in touch with Sam Malone anymore? And I just started wondering about that. I'm getting ready to write some Cheers fanfic what I think I'm saying. So
I think you had it right. I like about 3/4 of this episode, 2/3.
Yeah.
Again, like the last scene is kind of crazy, and the whole, it's also tainted because I know I have the benefit of, or the curse of foreknowledge where I know where the story goes and I'm not crazy about it.
It's kind of weird because Cheers didn't make many missteps. You don't look at too many plots or subplots on Cheers and go, oh, well, that didn't turn out well. And this is kind of one of those. You know, pretty much every time they had to replace a character, they freaking nailed it. They replaced Coach with Woody. They replaced Diane with Rebecca. They bring Frasier in. They bring Lilith in. They're batting 1,000 there. And this is one of the few examples where it's just like, oh yeah, that didn't quite work. And we kind of walked that back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, like part of that is why I always thought this was the outside world of the actors intruding on the story.
Absolutely.
Because I thought this spun out of Kirstie Alley's real life pregnancy. And I thought like kind of the only times when they allowed their story to be dictated by things that happened with the cast was, well, I mean, aside from Nikki Calasanto dying, Jay Thomas insulting Rhea Perlman led to his being killed off, not just written off, but killed off very gruesomely and definitively. And then I thought the pregnancy.
And also, like, he was a bigamist, so you shouldn't be sorry that he's dead anyway. Right. So,
exactly. Yeah. They really like made sure that you hated him after the fact. But then I thought the pregnancy storyline was just, well, they were doing the best with this, the the hands they got dealt. But then you find out, no, this was their own.
Yeah.
This was their own decision.
The timing was close, but it's not right because, yeah, as we said, she unfortunately had that miscarriage in 1990. And maybe people are mixing this up where other shows where it happened, because I know that happened on like Married with Children, which you brought up before, where like I think Peg Bundy was pregnant and then Katie Sigal had a miscarriage and they had to write that off. I think they said it was a dream.
Yeah, something. Yeah.
So, very unfortunate that the show has to do that, but probably the most tasteful way to get out of it quickly. Right. So, yeah.
Right. Frederick Crane is played by the child actors, the twins, Chris Graves and Kevin Graves, Daria by Tress McNeil, Paul played by Paul Wilson. And then, yeah, I said the Elvis impersonator is Pete Wilcox, who was an Elvis impersonator.
That's cool.
Hey, I'm just chiming in here because I need to correct my numbers after I miscounted on the last episode. Norm had 3 beers, which brings his total up to 937. However, the beer with the ball floating in it doesn't get deducted from his credit. So his credit is now 402 beers.
You are having to do so much more math for this podcast, my friend.
I really, this was a big mistake.
I know that you don't always record these episodes in the order that they come out. So you have to figure this out in advance. So yeah, I hope sometimes that your listeners appreciate all the effort that you are going to just for this bet on the pod.
Sometimes I will watch episodes ahead of time just to count numbers of beers. But yeah, the with the previous episode, when Kelly briefly worked at the bar, she was actually giving Norm free beers and erasing them from his tab.
I remember Yeah.
So that actually adds numbers to his credit that he had. So that he can still drink.
This is getting so complicated. I love it. Averaging about 100 beers a season, which I kind of love. Yeah.
Pretty much. Average more than, like 104 a season would average or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who is your employee of the week?
My employee of the week, as I kind of alluded to earlier, I feel like Ted Danson, Kelsey Grammer, and Rhea Perlman were all so great in this episode. I was like, I could give it to Sam. I could give it to Frasier. I could give it to Carla. It is obviously a Sam episode. It's a story about Sam, but Kelsey Grammer was just so damn good. I got to give it to Frasier, where he's like gesturing to Sam, like, no, really, give me a scotch. And him having the tantrum during the scene where Sam comes to Frasier and Lilith's townhouse. I think that's great. Yeah. He also, I'm going to just say, he's also my home run of the week. So yeah, I got to give it to Frasier.
Same. I liked, obviously Sam was good. Carla, for what little she did. I mean, Lilith is always good, but yeah. I was really impressed watching this one, how much everything Frasier said and did was really, really perfect. And I kind of mentioned my home runs range from when he's like ordering the ginger ales and then the little hand gesture thing that he does to Sam, like, you know, like top. Mm-hmm. And then like when he's like, he's my son, I made him, I get to keep him. And then probably his line where he's like, I didn't know we could make love in the morning. And she's like, we can't. Mm-hmm. It's just a for instance.
I would say my runner up for the home run, so I guess this would be a triple, would be Carla saying, you think I'm going to go through labor an eighth time because you're a little lonely? I mean, Rhea Perlman just nailed that, got every possible laugh out of it. But I think I'd say my absolute home run of the episode has to be Frasier's line. He's my son. I made him. I get to keep him. Just brilliance. I think probably the biggest laugh in the episode from the audience. Just brilliantly done. So, yeah, it's a Frasier episode. He's a supporting character in the story, but damn if Kelsey Grammer didn't bring it.
Even his last line, just the way he says, the man is dead. Like, he just, I love that delivery too. Yeah.
I mean, he just nailed everything they gave him. You can easily see, even at this point in the series, why they gave him the spinoff. So, yeah.
John, thanks for coming back for the end of season 9. Where else can people find you if they want to hear more from you?
Well, thanks for having me, as always. You can listen to me on my regular podcast, the SNL Nerds, which I do with my friend and fellow comic Darren Patterson, where we watch Saturday Night Live during the regular season. During the off weeks and the off season, we watch movies starring SNL alums. So we have a lot of fun with that. And we talk about the show and where it's going and all that. So
very cool. Very cool. Check that out, folks. Instead of my usual sign-off, right now I'm going to take a quick break, play some promos for other podcasts you can listen to. I will come back in a couple of minutes with my ranking of the Season 9 episodes, as well as the MVPs and a few other things. Don't go away.
In 1975, Jaws was released. It is routinely regarded as one of the greatest films of all time, and is generally credited with creating the concept of the summer blockbuster. In 1978, in an obvious cash grab, Jaws 2 was released, failing to have lightning strike a second time, but presenting a generally enjoyable film. In 1983, Jaws 3D was released, shamelessly attempting to take advantage of a gullible audience. By 1987, there was no pretense of quality as Lorraine Gary and Michael Caine cashed paychecks for sleepwalking through a pointless and incredulous sequel. In 2016, Paul Spitero created Is It Jaws, in which he and a group of rotating guest hosts discuss new and old movies and place them up against the Jaws scale, which ignores some elements of the actual films and sets forth a rating scale. Jaws, an all-time great classic film. Jaws 2, an enjoyable film with some flaws but worthy of multiple viewings. Jaws 3, a moderately enjoyable film. And finally, Jaws 4, a bad movie. Please join Paul and his guests as they ask the ever-important question, is it Jaws?
Hello there. Come on in and welcome to the Fantastic Four. I am your host, Brett Young, and this is the podcast serving up comics, cocktails, and conversation for your listening pleasure. Every episode, I'll welcome a guest to the Fantastic Lounge to explore one of their favorite comic book characters and cover a classic story in which they're featured. And what pairs better with great literature than a delicious drink? Based on my guest's ingredient of choice, we'll mix up a cocktail or mocktail to enjoy in the Fantastic Lounge while we talk comics, mixology, history, and whatever else comes to mind. So join me every month for the Fantastic Pour, open for business by the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
All right, I'm back to wrap up the 9th season of Cheerscast. First, I want to thank all of my guests who appeared on the show this season. Mike Blanchard, Tom and Charlotte Clements, Brandon Davis, Vicky and Mike DeCiper, Eric Elias, Langston Fishburne, Rick Heineken, Gene Hendricks, Natalie Jenner, Rob Kelly, Dan Liebke, Tim Price, Stephen Robinson, John and Maggie Schaefer-Hames, Al Sedano, Siskoid, Paul Spitaro, Marlene Stemme, John Trumbull, Omar Uden, Peter Vinosek, and A.J. Wright. I also want to thank the listeners who left comments on the website posts over at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Devin Clancy, Chris Franklin, Chris Lewis, Rob Kelly, Tim Price, who left a comment on nearly every episode, Clinton Robison, Siskoid, and extra special shout out to Mike Thomas, who did leave a comment on every episode this season. Thank you so much, Mike. I really appreciate the feedback. Speaking of feedback, the show received a couple of new reviews over at Apple Podcasts, or iTunes if you're nasty. Transplant Rockstar left a 5-star review titled Lots of Fun. The review says, "Wonderful podcast for all Cheers fans." Thank you very much for saying that, although I think you will find from the next review, my show is definitely not for all Cheers fans. DGB28 left a 4-star review titled Good Show, Okay Host. Buckle up for this one, folks. The review says, "The one drawback to this podcast is the host himself. He is constantly talking about whether this or that joke is politically correct in today's day and age, or whether something ages well. Who cares? Send me back to the 80s when people weren't so sensitive and touchy. Quite frankly, the host's virtue signaling is sickening. He's obsessed with letting everyone know he's a liberal and supports liberal causes." I mean, the only part of this review I take issue with is I think I'm more progressive than liberal, but I doubt that distinction would mean much to the person who wrote this review. I'm not going to fire back this time, because in spite of the fact that my worldview offends this reviewer, he still gave the show 4 stars, so thanks. The algorithm appreciates it. And Mr. Akito left a 5-star review titled 5*. I think that was supposed to be 5 stars. Anyway, the review says, "Fantastic podcast with excellent insight to each episode. Looking forward to future episodes when you have time." I am trying to make time, believe me. Now, on to the favorite superlative categories, starting with our Employees of the Month / MVP votes. Of all the characters in Season 9, Sam, probably not surprisingly, received the most MVP votes. However, Woody, Carla, and Frasier were right on his heels, all within 1 vote of Sam's total. But the biggest shocker was how many guest characters received 1 or more votes for Employee of the Week. Father Barry, Kevin McHale, Ma Clavin, Valerie Hill, Ed, Lauren, Kelly, and Frederick Crane all got an MVP vote. Lilith, Henri, and Earl each got 2 votes. But John Allen Hill received 4 votes for Employee of the Week. That's more than Cliff or Rebecca got this season. Finally, how I ranked the Season 9 episodes. As I explain at the end of every season, this list only reflects my feelings about the Cheers episodes. It has nothing to do with who was the guest on that episode or the quality of our discussion. Just because Tim Price was on my lowest ranked episode does not mean I don't love Tim dearly. The truth is, Tim is the only one of my guests that I do like. At the bottom, number 25, Love is a Really, Really Perfectly Okay Thing, the season premiere. Number 24, Crash of the Titans. 23, Grease. 22, Norman Cliff's Excellent Adventure. Number 21, Uncle Sam Wants You, the season finale. 20, Cheers Fouls Out. 19, Ma Always Liked You Better. 18, Where Nobody Knows Your Name. 17, Honor Thy Mother. 16, Cheers Has Chili. 15, Home Alone. 14, Sam Time Next Year. 13, Pitch It Again, Sam. 12, Achilles Hill. 11, Breaking In Is Hard to Do. At number 10, Carla Loves Clavin. At 9, It's a Wonderful Wife. Number 8, Wedding Bell Blues. Number 7, Veggie Boyd. Number 6, The Day of Wine and Neuroses. Number 5, Bad Neighbor Sam. Number 4, I'm Getting My Act Together and Sticking It in Your Face. Number 3, Rebecca Redoux. Number 2, Woody Interrupt Us. And number 1, Little Rat Girl. You might have noticed I did not include the 200th episode special on that list. It's such a weird and different type of episode, I don't know how to compare it to the others. It doesn't really belong on the list. Maybe I'll figure out where to slot it on the master list of all episodes when I finish season 11. We'll see. First, I have to start season 10 before I can even think about the end of the series. But I'm hoping to do that soon, within the next 2 months, because I realized there's only 50 episodes of Cheers left to cover. Start the countdown, folks. Now, thanks to every one of you who listens to Cheerscast and supports the show by liking and sharing on social media and leaving comments on the website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also support the Fire and Water Podcast Network on Patreon. Cheerscast is supported by the Right On Network and Jeff and Rick Presents Unpacking the Power of Power Pack. Go to patreon.com/FWPodcast to support your favorite show on the Fire and Water Network. Thanks everyone for listening, and until next time, we're closed.
Whew! Weirdest thing just happened to me. I could have sworn I just had a conversation with Elvis Presley.
Well, Sam, I've had 4 or 5 patients that have had the same experience. I'll simply tell you what I told them. The man is dead.